Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Tatra Nibhina Katranam Chittavai Vivam Mukhyaha Viplavo Buddha Dukhinam Duksaha Kutranatmanamam. Translation. When King Paranjana was hunting in this way, many animals within the forest lost their lives with great pain, being pierced by sharp arrowheads. Upon seeing these devastating, ghastly activities performed by the king, all the people who were merciful by nature became very unhappy. Such merciful persons could not tolerate seeing all this killing. Please repeat. When King Paranjana was hunting in this way, many animals within the forest lost their lives with great pain, being pierced by sharp arrowheads. Upon seeing these devastating, ghastly activities performed by the king, all the people who were merciful by nature became very unhappy. Such merciful persons could not tolerate seeing all this killing. Purport. When demoniac persons engage in animal killing, the demigods or devotees of the Lord are very much aggrieved by this killing. Demoniac civilizations in this modern age maintain various types of slaughterhouses all over the world. Rascal swamis and yogis encourage foolish persons to go on eating flesh and killing animals, at the same time continue their so-called meditation and mystical practices. All these affairs are ghastly, and a compassionate person, namely a devotee of the Lord, becomes very unhappy to see such a sight. The hunting process is also carried on in a different way. As we have already explained, hunting women, drinking different types of liquor, becoming intoxicated, killing animals, and enjoying sex all serve as the basis of modern civilization. Vaishnavas are unhappy to see such a situation in the world. And therefore, they are very busy spreading this Krishna consciousness movement. The devotees are paying to see the hunting and killing of animals in the forest, the wholesale slaughter of animals in the slaughterhouses, and the exploitation of young girls in the brothels that function under different names as clubs and societies. Being very much compassionate upon the killing of animals and sacrifice, the great sage Narada began his instructions to King Pachinaparasat. In these instructions, Narada Muni explained that devotees like him are very much affected by all the killing that goes on in human society. Not only are saintly persons affected by the killing, but even God himself is afflicted and therefore comes down in the incarnation of Lord Buddha. Jayadeva Goswami therefore sings, Sadaya Haidaya Dakshita Pushukaritam. Simply to stop the killing of animals, Lord Buddha compassionately appeared. Some rascals put forward the theory that an animal has no soul, or is something like a dead stone. In this way, they rationalize that there is no sin in animal killing. Actually, animals are not dead stone, but the killers of animals are stone-hearted. Consequently, no reason or philosophy appeals to them. They continue keeping slaughterhouses and killing animals in the forest. The conclusion is that one who does not care for the instructions of saintly persons like Narada, and his disciplic succession surely falls into category of Nasta Prajna and thus goes to hell. So, pretty heavy. Srila Prabhupada, in one famous discussion with one cardinal in France, Cardinal Richelieu or Danilo or something, brought up this very same point, that actually the soul killers, they're not just killing animals and who they feel have no souls, but they're killing their own soul. You know, the killing of their own soul is even more dangerous and deadly, because when they're eating meat and following all these intoxications, ultimately they're killing their own soul. So in that exchange with Srila Prabhupada and his cardinal, very famous, and in his French accent he's talking, and ultimately he doesn't believe that the animals have any soul. He says, God has provided them for food for us, for the children. They have to eat. What do they eat if they don't eat the animals? And Prabhupada, of course, can't tolerate this, and he's trying to explain to this cardinal, get it through his head, like most people in society. They can't understand about this point about not eating meat. Well, I know, you know, from previous history, and many of the devotees, the foreigner, the pioneers in our society, were afflicted by all these different things mentioned here in this purport. We all ate meat. We were all intoxicated. We all had illicit sex, and we all gambled to some degree. Just about all the early devotees, because there was no knowledge of anything else. One comes to this knowledge, comes to this platform of understanding only by the mercy of a spiritual master. So if there is no spiritual master and you have no knowledge, then where do you go? You're lost. And so that happens to be the case of probably 90% of those devotees who started this movement. And so now with this oncoming new generation, there's hope, because ultimately you don't have to be fooled by the inebrieties of material life, being stuck in these modes of nature when you're dragged down to the lower portions of hell. And so that's what it's all about. And Prabhupada trying to make that point clear to this cardinal, it was just not sinking in. And like Prabhupada says in their purport, they do not listen. They don't want to hear it, because that's their sense gratification. They don't want to lose it. And in my own case, you know, personally, talking to my relatives, my sisters and friends and people sitting around the table all eating meat, and it's just sickening, because they won't listen. They won't hear it. Don't talk to me about this. I don't want to hear it. Now, if they may ask a question, why don't you eat meat? Then you have to respond, we don't eat dead flesh. And we don't chew on the bones of animals. It's like a graveyard within our body. Leonardo da Vinci mentioned that. We are walking graveyards. When will that time come when the killing of animals be equated to killing of humans? Ultimately, unfortunately, that time hasn't come. So as it goes on, as this killing business is encouraged and is repeated over and over again, millions of bodies are being burnt and eaten. You know, this, I don't know this, I forget the statistics now, but a cow is one of the top in the line. But the chickens and the eggs and everything else, the fish, birds, everything that walks, crawls, in some parts of the Orient, they'll eat anything. And Prabhupada made a joke about, there was one in some parts, I don't know if it's Hong Kong or someplace, where they have a pot outside the door. And they throw everything in that pot that dies, cockroaches, rats, snakes, whatever it might be. They throw it all into this big pot, and it ferments, of course. And so when it comes to the new year, and we have now a really nice drink, we're going to filter that and drink it. They get intoxicated on all that garbage. And so if they cook halibut, some devotees were having that problem. They're cooking halibut, and the smell is too much for these people. But they're on the front porch of all these houses. They got the most foul-smelling substance, and they drink it. So I'm sitting with my relatives, my sisters, and they're breaking these crab legs, and it's going all over me. So I walked outside and had to throw up. It's just too much to handle. And the whole of human society is on the verge of total chaos. Now, we have 6 days left to the end of the world. Everybody know about that? And so what are we going to do? What, as devotees, where are we going to go? Where do you go when you're in Vrindavan and you're in the laps of the Supreme Lord in Krishna's hands? Where do you go from there? You know, there's no place else to go, of course. But, you know, these devotees, karmis, and these people who are on the fringe of death, they're thinking that. They're thinking they're stocking up on their meat, and they got big locker houses full of it. And so they just, you know, they can't be without their meat. Intoxications, they got, you know, big liquor cabinets, and, you know, and they have a swimming pool full of beer. Now, how about that one? It's swimming in beer. There's oceans of all kinds of things, liquor ocean. And so why not an ocean of beer? So this story with the killing of animals is a long long history. And Prabhupada, one of his main points in delivering this message was to stop that. Like Lord Buddha, as mentioned. Lord Buddha, as a prince, he didn't understand because he sheltered in a palace and he didn't go out to see the effects of what life is all about. So if you pass through the whole life process from birth to death, there are many things you'll see along the way. So in the beginning, there's been so much emphasis on sex, because sex life is on everybody's mind. And so where is it more important than, you know, but unfortunately, it's not in the bedroom anymore. It's on billboards, it's, you know, on the radio, on television, it's in news media, it's everywhere except where it belongs for procreating children. So the whole material world is turned upside down, and that's why there will be more tsunamis and hurricanes and so many other natural disasters, and thousands of people will die. And there are many different predictions that are being played all over the world right now. So people are, you know, they're in deadly fear. And a lot of people are coming to India now because they're afraid if the world ends, they better do it here in India where there's some hope. I don't know what they think, because they're not connecting to Krishna consciousness. They just think India is a holy place. So I'm going to go to the holy place and I'll die there. So Rishikesh right now is full of these hippies and beatniks who are, like, you know, on the fringe of, like, you know, total disaster and suicide. Now, of course, you know what happens with suicide case. If anybody here is contemplating suicide, better not think about it, because it won't do you any good. Some devotees have killed themselves. And ultimately, this is not only a killer of the soul, but of the body. That makes it even worse, because the body doesn't belong to us, like Lord Chaitanya was telling Sanatana. This body, and Rupa, who wanted to, and Raghunath, who wanted to jump off at that time, Govardhan Hill was much bigger. It goes down 1 foot every year, if you know. You calculate one sesame seed per day. That's 1 foot a year. I've been here 34 years, and I saw a heavy drop in Govardhan. So you can figure in our lifetime, it's gone. We won't have any Govardhan. So take advantage of Govardhan while you see it. But in any case, what happens in the material world is that we're prone to these modes of nature. And by being prone to the modes, we are susceptible to the allurements of the flesh. Of course, you know, sex being topmost in the minds of all karmis. And so Prabhupada says civilizations are built and destroyed, you know, on the blinking of an eyelash of a female. Now, all the females, not all, but many, were men in their last life. So think about that, ladies, that, you know, you were in a man's body. Now you move to the back of the room. But ultimately, your last slot, your last thought, dictates, of course, your next body. So if we're in Krishna consciousness, and suppose that suddenly the whole thing shakes, and the turn of the axis, they're predicting that you know, there's going to be heavy, you know, natural disasters and war, bombs are going to start flying. Okay, so Prabhupada was asked, what happens, what's a devotee supposed to do when there's a time of war and there's a threat of death? Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram, Ram. So what else? I mean, that's the answer to all problems. And if we're a devotee, if we're Krishna conscious, if we're here in Vrindavan, ultimately you've made the step to, you know, away from the material modes. You've already transcended. You're in the spiritual world. So here we are, situated in a place that is uncontaminated. And it's fearless. There's Abhaya, it's Prabhupada's name, Abhaya, means fearless. And so Baya means fear. So Jara, which is death, is old age and death, personified. Excuse me. Everything is personified. Everything. There are persons, demigods, who are in control of all the different functions of our body. Okay, so fear is accompanies death. And if one is worried about death, then ultimately he's in a very fearful condition, because ultimately there's no knowledge of what happens next to most people in their last moments. And like the famous story about Akbar and asking the question, what happens, when does sex life stop? And so the famous story that he was brought in front of a dying man with his daughter. And so the minister says, you watch the face of that dying man when we enter the room. So you see who he looks at first. Okay, so they walked in. Then a daughter walked in, and his eyes went right away to the beauty of that young girl. And so women are very attractive and meant to attract the opposite sex, and so it goes both ways. And I'm always kind of laughing at the people who have to talk about sex life, and there's so much of it in the Bhagavatam, and why? People ask that, why is there so much emphasis on sex? Because they cover it in some way, you know, in the material world. In one way they cover it, and the other way they splash it all over the media. And so, why is there so much emphasis on that? Well, it's because there's so much of the strongest force that man is unfortunately subdued by. And so, by being controlled in this manner, ultimately, there's no tighter grip on a person's intelligence, because it's the desires that we have within our heart are a binding force in the material world. That's the topmost binder. But it's sannyasis who are always talking about it. They give classes. I mean, I've heard it now, so many, at least five or six sannyasis talking about sex. Now, that's not right. It just doesn't seem to be fitting. Here they are, the renunciees and brahmacharis. Anybody who talks about it, it should be Grihastha talking because he has that facility. Now, let me say from my experience, I've been married 40 years. And it's just a dim memory now. I'm vanaprast, but you go through life in a progression, and ultimately it just becomes dim memories, and it's just flickering images that you remember in your course of your whole life. And as you get older, like in some civilizations, when you reach in your 70s and your 80s, then you're qualifying for the dining table. It means, like in cannibals, they sacrifice their elders, their elders. They don't learn from them, they sacrifice them. And so they eat them. And so what better way to end a life than be eaten by your daughters and sons and relatives. And so I'm 74 and I qualify now. So please, you know, I don't want to be eaten yet. The ravages of time have already taken place. And so this happens automatically, and the whole process of life through death is like in a flash. It's over. And so we think we got all the time in the world when you're young. You think, oh my God, unlimited sex. All the women in the world are just pray for me. I can handle the whole thing. I can take on, you know, like, you know, the kings of old, they had so many wives. And it used to be, Prabhupada said you could have more than one wife. And I thought about it. Then I thought, no, I'll forget it. One is enough, and there's enough trouble with one wife. In any case, because there's so many women, more than men, Prabhupada says all women should be married and no men. So we figure that one out. And ultimately, it's just kind of a joke. Prabhupada, he caught so many jokes, you know. It was really, Prabhupada had a real sense of humor, and it came in many ways. Like Shrutakirti was asked by Prabhupada, is your mother beautiful? Because he was looking at his feet. And if the feet are beautiful, then the mother must have been beautiful. So, in any case, the bottom line of all this, that, you know, those people who are out there, you know, in this moment, thinking that the world's going to end in 1 week, 1 6 days from now, it happens to be my birthday. And so the world ends it's just unfortunate, you know, the world is like that. They're stocking up on all the supplies, and then very soon they're going to end their life. Maybe jumping off the bridge or someplace. There's a couple points I want to make. It's mentioned that women are nine times, this is mentioned in the Bhagavatam, that women are nine times more lusty than men. I haven't seen it. I don't know that. But and now there's something that's happening. If you want to go to Harvard University, Shri Gornitai Kijai Radhacham Sindhulita Pashaka Kijai. If you go to Harvard University, there's a special course opening this semester. It's a three-month course. It's in a college or one semester, 3 months. It's called Kinky Sex. So you can go to Harvard University and learn how to do all kinds of perversion. Can you believe that? I mean, that's now in a curriculum that just opened up in Harvard University, the epitome of like, you know, the Ivy League college line. And so it's unfortunate what happens in today's society, but it's just an ongoing deal that the more we go on with the, you know, civilization to the point of time where it's going to be, it's predicted a lot of people will die in the next, maybe next generation. So it may be something that we have to look forward to, because it'll be good preaching the way it's been explained. There was an incident, there was a moment in our history in Italy that there was, you know, according to the understanding of the nature of married life, and those who were overseeing this factor, in other words, I'm saying that, that there was a moment when a grihasta had, he had 45 minutes, he had a half hour, there was a room provided. This is Italy in the earlier days. A room was provided. There'd be kirtan outside the room. They had to go in, the man and woman go inside, the couple would go in, perform their obligation, and then come out within 45 minutes. If they didn't, they'd start banging on the door, and ultimately it had to be done quick with your clothes on. And so it's so funny that, you know, what happens in our society. We've gone through a long period of change now. In the very beginning, there was a time when the sannyasis were fighting in a veritable battle with the grihasthas. And so sannyasis wanted to kick out all the grihasthas from the movement, at least from the temples. Get them out. They don't belong inside. Get them out. And so that meant sannyasis, brahmacharis, inside, grihasthas anywhere else, but don't be inside. And so it came to quite a battle. And Prabhupada just said, you decide amongst yourselves. And that really set it up. That was in Mayapur. So there was a bitter conflict, and actually ended up that the presidents are mostly grihasthas, and they decided that there should be some common ground. And so that took place. There was common ground, and there was a chance for society to carry on. Now, old age Jara is, there's a history of this personality. In the Mahabharata, she appeared to like all the Pandavas, in the whole Pandava force. And I think maybe on the other side also. But she's dressed in rags and bloody looking and ugly. And so getting her married was a problem, because she's the daughter of death. And but it happened, and she approached Narada Muni, if you heard this story. Narada Muni is constant brahmachari. He's fixed up in his vows. He's not going to have any marriage at all. And so she cursed him to give that curse that he has to wander around. And so Prabhupada had the same kind of curse. He was able to, you know, preach all over the world 14 times in the matter of years that he had. So there were three personalities. I'll go back to the first one that I remember. Her name was Gauri Dasi, and she was one of the first leading devotees to leave her body here. Okay, we're coming now. We're going through the whole process of, you know, birth to death. Now, at this point, I wanted to bring up these memories that one Russian lady was dying, and I had this full-size Murti Prabhupada standing. So we brought it into the room, and it was behind the guest house, one of those rooms where she was dying. We brought in this full-size Prabhupada standing, put it right next to her bed. And so it opened up her eyes, and she took one look, and I think she passed away soon after. Now, Gauri Dasi was one of the first, this goes way back, maybe 25 years ago. Okay, she was a great saint, a great sadhu, because she was told by the doctor, Narottam, you have 1 hour to live. Okay, so he asked, do you have any desires? And she looked at him and said, no, I have no desires. And ultimately, an hour later, she was gone. So I was holding her deities, and my wife was holding photographs of Prabhupada in front of her face, and it was just flashing pictures of Prabhupada, and deities were there, and you know, chanting in the background, big kirtan. And she asked to be put on the floor, out of the bed, so she could be like a yogi and leave, you know, with her body touching the floor. Okay, so I could see the flutter of her tongue, and I could see when she's gone. And so it was nothing said. It was nothing but, you know, a kirtan, you know, a Bororius kirtan. Of course, it reminded me when Prabhupada left. I was in the room when Prabhupada left. And there was a moment that I think anybody in that room will never forget. Even the video doesn't show enough of what really took place. So there are many occasions where Prabhupada mentioned that Narada Muni, Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, they all came for darshan. And, you know, different times in L.A. it happened. I was there when Prabhupada said at the end, of, after the kirtan, it's a glorious kirtan. They were all there. All these demigods come. And so at one point in San Francisco it happened. Narada Muni came and disguised himself with a bowler hat. And then also in London, the same thing. He disguised himself as a Britisher with an umbrella and a suit and bowler hat. And so there are many occasions where the demigods would come in kirtan and watch the Malakshyas and the Yavanas dance with the big smiles on their face. I can't believe the prophet had turned all this rubbish, these Malakshyas, these drug-addicted homosexuals and all kinds of freaks in society. Crazy. I mean, there was no lack of crazies in that time. And Vrindavan is a place for crazies. If you want to be crazy here in Vrindavan, because you got grand opportunity. You're in facility with the craziest people in the world. They all come here. And Prabhupada said they'll get a lot of, they get a lot of these people decked up in saffron, you know, with beards and looking like sadhus, and they put on the pretense. They get all dressed up, and they're looking for women who are dressed up the same way. And I see it. They go to their, you know, for their japatis, and they see men and women together. Now, I have a friend who is a sannyasi, and half of the year he goes back to his lover. He's not married to the girl, but had kids with this lady. And so at half a year, he goes into his loving affair. Then half of the year, he goes out, puts on the clothes, and he goes out and makes disciples. And so be careful. Be very careful who you get initiated by, because you don't know sometimes. This guy is making disciples, unwearing disciples who have no idea what he's doing. So in any case, you know, there's a long history of, you know, when these first people joined the movement. I remember some of the, even here, there was a moment where we had two head pujaris, and they were battling out. I was on the altar doing the arti, you know, and then on the other side of the wall, these two guys are banging it out. Fist fight was going on, banging against the wall, shouting and screaming at each other. So this is the way it was in the earlier days. And so anybody who's gone through those early pioneering moments, I have to be given a little respect, because they've been beaten, kicked in the face, and burnt on all sides, roasted and toasted until they become a little bit purified. And so a diamond is made by coal with lots of pressure and lots of heat. And so don't be afraid of that. If within society you're getting burnt, but the burning process in the devotional field is also there. It's there for a purpose. And so we are in the material world. It's a prison house. So understand that ultimately the prison house is meant to suffer. We are meant to be here to suffer. Unless we surrender, we fall to the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. If you don't do that, then ultimately you go back out there in 6 days, the world's going to end. And they're going to be afraid of that. And there's so many people. It's a hysteria. This happens. I've researched it. It started Nero, who fiddled when Rome was burning. He was predicting the world's going to end then. And all the way across through history, there's so many predictions of people getting on soapboxes and predicting the end of the world. So we know that comes in 427,000 years from now. Not the end, but a change. So it goes back to such a yug. So I've seen another devotee, this friend of mine, who would have been the first to leave at Radhika and came back to Vrindavan. But every time I witness somebody leaving her body, it's peaceful, wonderful. And one devotee who was in California, he was unconscious. And so after I told his wife, he just flashed, keep pictures of Prabhupada in front of you. Don't let him see you. Otherwise that thought will bring about that female body again. So he's unconscious for days. At the last moment, he opens one eye and reaches for that picture of Prabhupada. Prabhupada. Gone. There's an incident that took place some years ago. There was a French sannyasi, the first French sannyasi, Pritaputra Maharaj, who was in his last moments. And it was at that time that these doctors are hovering over his body, wondering how many more minutes he had left. And so suddenly he just sits up. Prabhupada, you've come. and falls back and dies. And so that's the answer. That prophet will come for us at the time of death. If we're neglecting any part of our spiritual life, it'll be taken care of, because Prabhupada promised to bring us all back home, back to Godhead. And he's got the key to the back door. So if you have any problem with that, thinking that you're not advanced or you're not going to make it in this lifetime, Prabhupada gave the benediction that all my disciples and grant and carrying on will make it back home, back to Godhead, because it's a very big place. It's three times bigger than this material unit creation. There's no problem for that. It happened that there was, in the time of the World War II, there were people flying planes where they had mystical experiences. And it came out this slogan that God is my co-pilot. And so God being a co-pilot means, you know, super soul. So consciousness, if we're, our conscience will dictate to us, sorry, that if you're sensitive to it, conscience is nothing else but super soul. And so when our conscience is bothering us, it means go right. Don't go straight. Go right. You listen to that. And if you listen subjectively to the voice that's inside all of us, you'll be directed to a point where you can actually steer yourself through all problems and make it back home on that razor's edge without any problem. That's super soul. He's dictating to us from within the heart as a witnessing agent. So if we just follow that. Now, there's one analogy I want to bring up. Anybody heard the Socrates cave analogy? Raise your hand. Nobody. Okay, I can tell it. Okay, there's this great philosopher, Greek philosopher, you know, years before, that he told a story, and it's in most literatures and in colleges around the world. If you study world literature, you'll get this story. So Socrates, being a great saint, I mean, sage. He was, Prabhupada said he was a muni, that because he knew about the soul, that there's no death. The soul will live on, is eternal. He knew that. And so he voluntarily drank poison and to prove the fact that they can't kill the soul. You kill a body, okay. Okay, there's one analogy he said that there's a whole segment of living beings who are in this cave. And so they see nothing but flashes of light on the wall in front of them. They're bound, they're tied. And behind them, there's some light source. It's a fire. And so that the flickering flames are casting shadows of these people who are tied in the cave. So they're seeing their own shadows on this wall as dancing figures because of the flickering light. And so one person happens to get free. And so he frees himself, and he ultimately climbs out of the cave. And it takes some while to see. The vision is blurred because of the intensity of the light. He's not adjusted to the light because he's in a cave for his whole life. And so finally he adjusts to the light, and he sees that there's a whole world out here. It's not the world that we thought just in the cave, but actually there's a whole world above the world that we experience on a daily basis. And so catch the analogy here. And so he's seeing that, and he wants to, of course, free up his friends who are in the hole. So if you have something wonderful to share, you want to, if you have some gold that you've suddenly found, you want to share that with everybody. And so he goes back down to the cave and he frees up some of his close friends who he was next to when he was tied up. And so the first thing, that he couldn't say a word, they killed him instantly because they didn't want to hear it. So he says there's another world, it's a higher world above us. And so we as devotees have the same problem. When you go out there and preach and you're asking people to change their life story, you know, give up meat eating, sex life, and everything else, it's like, you know, wow, you're telling me to give up these things that are, and like Prabhupada in the very beginning, he said that later in a class. He said, I come to your country, I'm asking you to give up all these things, no sex, I mean, no intoxication, and who he preached to, they were all hippies, and all of us were doing the same thing, embedded in this enjoying spirit. And so when you're young, you think it'll last forever, and it doesn't. Time goes by very fast, and it's all flickering, and you're just wasting time in this spirit of enjoyment, whatever it might be. And so, and he said, you know, I'm asking you to make all these changes. When I got off the boat in Boston, I'm thinking they're going to tell me to go back. Go back, Swami. We don't want anything to do with that. And so he made a joke. everybody laughed at that time because it was funny. Hayagriva kept saying that, you know, when he posted, it was like Martin Luther posted his grievances on a door in Germany, and it started the Reformation. So Prabhupada tacked the door, he tacked on the, you know, the principles that had to be followed on a door, very early in the game when he was first making the movement start. Okay, here Hayagriva looked at the list of, you know, no meat eating, no intoxication, no illicit sex. He says, Swami, better we just give it up. You're saying only once a month and only for children? That means nobody can have any fun. Yes, yes, that's it. Give it up. So that was the whole idea. Give up this whole sex life. And so it's not hard. It's rubbing of flesh. If you rub your hands together, you get the same vibration. That's all it is. Everybody rubbed their hands together. That's fun. That's it. That's it. That's as far as it goes. There's nothing more than that. And so it's glorified and purified, you know, idealized. It's a wonderful thing. It's everybody's ultimate end to be, you know, die in the arms of the opposite sex. Now, there's one devotee. That's a personal story that really is funny. So we were sharing apartment in Los Angeles, and they had apartment buildings, and so we were in one of those apartments. There's music in the air. And so he was a transvestite. You know what? Everybody know what a transvestite is? I bet you don't. It's a person who doesn't know whether he's male or female. And so this guy, he was a man, but he used to go into the Brahmacharini ashram and dress up as a Brahmacharini, you know, and dance. Haribo, Haribo. And so then he would go in the Brahmachari ashram. Haribo, Haribo. And so he wrote to Prabhupada, and he asked Prabhupada, I have this problem, Srila Prabhupada. I don't know which ashram I should be in. So Prabhupada wrote back, he said, listen, just pick out whatever one you want and stay there. So don't change back and forth. Don't be flickering in your idea. Then there was a woman who was, and this was being explained by this girl, Govinda Dasi, to Prabhupada. And she kept saying, Prabhupada, I have this problem when I'm in the girl's ashram. And he couldn't understand what she was saying. Because, you know, then finally this girl, Govinda Dasi, explained to him. She was Prabhupada, she's a lesbian. She has trouble, you know, being around women. Oh, my God. He couldn't believe it. He said, even women have that trouble. See, he doesn't have that experience, you know. And the time of how he, well, of course, Prabhupada, you know, he knew everything. But in any case, there are people that are conflicted in their minds. I don't know where to begin or end their life. And so they're just totally lost. And at the time of death, they're in death and afraid of what is the unknown. Have no idea what's to happen. But Prabhupada says that we are in a position. We're in a position, and especially here in Vrindavan, where it's like Shangri-La. That means it's a place where you don't age. And so, like Bibi Chaitanya used to be here, sitting, giving out the Charitamrita, and cooked for so many years. He'd never aged. When he left, his body was a very youthful-looking face. And so, and you leave, and there's no tension, no pain, no strain. You're leaving with the ultimate end in your mind that you know you're going back home, back to Godhead. So where's the strain? And so all of us have that opportunity, as long as you follow the regular principles and don't deviate and jump off the ship. So Prabhupada made it easy. It couldn't be any easier, of course. But in the world at large, especially scientists, I've seen some videos of science heretics. They're branded heretics in society because they fluctuate between what is normally accepted within the realms of the Royal Society of Scientific Thought, and those who are on a common level, like who understand what the reality is. So even just to be a rational thinker, to have a common mind that you know that A plus B is going to be followed by C. Scientists, they don't agree. There's no God. There can't be, because it's all scientific thought. It has to be revolutionized, you know, in industry. Well, the revolution is what the devotees are doing. But in common science is that, you know, we're basing everything on theory and on hypotheses and how to experiment and have a clean observation. And so they go on that assumption, but the deeper they go in their investigation, now instrumentation that goes way beyond the magnification and the exploration in space. So in either direction, or both directions, they're seeing God. And so if you can't see that, if you can't see God in everything that happens, how Tulsi grows. I mean, it's a miracle. You know, seed goes in the ground, all these different vegetables and fruits, everything fructifies by an automatic process. Lord Chaitanya just dropped a mango seed in the ground. In Mayapur, bingo, up comes a tree. Now, with these fruits that had no skin, no seed, mangoes, that one mango would satisfy, like, you know, anybody's appetite. And so, if the Lord can do anything, so anything can manifest, and all of it is just, the material world is just a composite of miracles. So, in every way, in every vision, it's all mysterious. And it's unbelievable that people can't accept God as a person. That it can't be that there is a person in control of everything that happens. So they will not accept, like we were here in a class yesterday, that ultimately we're subservient to the Supreme Lord. If you can't accept that, like scientists, they think only of themselves being as, you know, higher in status than anything that walks. And so, and then they have their famous debates and they have their concourses and they get together and debate who is the smartest. And ultimately, this Peter Hawking, one guy is in a crippled condition and he's credited to being one of the most intelligent. And they're all talking about the Big Bang Theory and the dark holes and all this stuff. It's 4 billion miles across the whole universe. So how much can happen within that 4 billion mile radius? And so, unfortunately, science is like clouded. And the only way it's going to ever change is because, devotees are able. I've got a couple more stories. One is fitting with this conclusion that there's one devotee. He was on a motorcycle and he had a near-death experience. He went smack into the back of a car. And two old ladies are driving a car and stop. And so he dies. He actually died. And for a few moments, he went to the court of Yamaraj. So he goes to the court of Yamaraj and he sees he's waiting in line with the other people waiting in line to see Yamaraj. So now Yamaraj has got the book. He knows everything that's on our slate because where is it? It's the super soul who tells him everything that happened to each individual. And you can imagine how busy Yamaraj is. When 99.9% of everyone who dies goes to court of Yamaraj. Very rare you get a devotee. Okay, here he is, a devotee in the court of Yamaraj. And so Yamaraj looks at him, why are you here? Go back! Not your time, go back! And so, right away, he was back in his body. And so, there he was, under the car, on his motorcycle, and two ladies looking at him. But he saw Yamaraj. Yamaraj, very beautiful, very broad-chested, gold ornaments, golden color, very handsome. And that was Yamaraj. So, but the Yamadutas is a different case. So those Yamadutas, if you want, you don't want to see those guys. And there was a friend of mine whose father was dying, and he was hiding under the bed because he was seeing the Yamadutas. And he was like deathly afraid. And the daughter of that woman saw the Yamadutas attacking. And they were going after him, you know, with the chains and trying to capture the guy. It wasn't quite his time yet. Now there's another story. A friend of mine, who's here in Vrindavan, he was a medic in Vietnam. 400 people died in his arms. And so when they were dying, they all, Doc, Doc, don't let them get me. No, no, they're coming after me. Who? Who's coming after you? And so he tried to find out. He couldn't get the answer because they died. 400 people, they died. There was no answer. And so he kept asking, anybody know what happens at time of death? Asked the ministers, you know, the rabbis, he asked everybody who had any kind of, you know, special intelligence. Nobody had any answers. So finally one guy said, listen, you want answers to these questions? You should go to India. So he comes to India, he goes to Benares, and he's sitting there on the dock, on the burning ghat, and some sannyasi comes up. He said, what are you doing here? He said, well, he told the story. He says, I'm here because he showed the burning bodies. So what's your question? What happens at time of death? The Yamadutas. So he told him the whole story, you know, the Yamadutas. And so I've written this up in a book that's coming, forthcoming. And at that point, I paraphrase Prabhupada. Prabhupada is speaking, telling the whole thing about what happens at the time of death, what happens, you know, to the body, and the whole rigmarole, everything that Prabhupada is speaking through this allegory. Now, it happened to Christ when he was on a planet. He spoke in parables. So parables are stories that are told to people who are not so intelligent. Okay, these parables are meant as instructive stories to people who have no intelligence. So Christ was here on Indian soil for 12 years to learn how to talk to these people who did have no intelligence. Now, why would there be 10 commandments unless they were killing and doing all those, violating these 10 ways? Prabhupada spoke in stories. And in the parables and also analogies what's the other one called? Allegories. So allegory, it's called allegories. Now it's pronounced so many ways, but allegory is telling one story, but the whole story, King Paranjana, is this allegory. King Prajan Bharata is the same person. Paranjana and he are the same. And so and we are that person also. So any individual, any person can identify with these stories. Okay, Prabhupada spoke in stories. And so many of the things he spoke went choo, right over the heads of most disciples. I'm on a morning walk with Prabhupada. And so this thing came up about the seer of the soul. And Prabhupada said, the seer of the soul and the body are the same. What did that mean? I mean, everybody looked at each other. Wow. The seer of the soul is the same. And so that means that we embodied in this machine, we have the soul, which is a seer in all conditions. So we're seeing, and we're also aided by super soul, by Paramatma in the soul, who aids us in every move we make. So we just have to be sensitive to that mood and be able to make the transition. Now that, speaking of transition, Prabhupada was asked this thing about the heart transplant. What happens to the spirit soul? What happens to super soul when a heart is taken out and a new heart is given? So Prabhupada said it's like changing your house. So you just move to the next house. When the new heart comes in, super soul goes into that heart, and ultimately you're there also. I got two more stories and I'll close. Now, when I was a brand new devotee, I was told that unless you go out and preach, unless you share this knowledge, you're going to be a miserly, a creeping personality, unless you go out and share it. So it means we have to go out and preach. One way or another, if you're still here in Vrindavan and you're writing, that's one kind of preaching. That's a great means. I got a book coming out soon. It's on Prabhupada. And drawing explains Prabhupada's life through his own words. Prabhupada is speaking, and he's telling stories that I think have never been told. I just heard things, and I searched and found new ideas and things that Prabhupada, they don't know or hasn't been told. Any case, so preaching is the essence. And what Prabhupada meant by that is that I was told this when I was a brand new devotee. Says that when you go out there with books, you make sure everybody you see gets a book. Because if they don't, it means they may go back in the in-breath of Mahavishnu, because they're going to take, in the end of this life, animal birth, and they go right straight back through the whole species of life. That's 8,400,000 species of life, and that means it's going to be outside the time of the in-breath of Vishnu. And so you're going to go right back into Vishnu in millions of years. You're not going to see you're not going to see any light. And so, that's the reality. The people in the material world, they should be afraid. They should be afraid of the death that's coming. So it may not be the death of the entire world, the stop of universe, but certainly it's going to be the death of anybody, all of us. How we die, it all depends on the knowledge we have. It all depends on that last thought, and whatever we think at the last moment is the birth we get. So, okay. Any questions? I'm finished. Anybody have any doubt? Anybody think? I think I have a microphone around. I'll repeat it. Go ahead. If there's no microphone available, there's one over here coming. Maybe not. Oh, go ahead. Yeah, Prabhupada gave that. Yeah, no problem. Yeah. Anybody else? That's bogus. Anybody who says you're not going back home in this life is bogus, because Prabhupada predicted, he guaranteed it. He says you are all going back to Godhead. That wasn't just the first level. I mean, a pioneering group, okay, did some austerities, but no, it continues on for the whole time. ISKCON is a movement. And so as long as it's a movement, as long as we're moving, it means that everybody within this, our organization, is going back home, back to Godhead. So don't let it be told any other way. That if Prabhupada guarantees something, like he was told by a devotee, he was asked, Srila Prabhupada, your Guru Maharaj said that Christ is a Shaktivesh avatar. Yes. He says, well, my Guru Maharaj wouldn't have said it if it wasn't true. And so Prabhupada, the same thing. He wouldn't have said anything unless it was true. He didn't make lies or tried to flatter. He says, I have no money. I'm not buying these people, these Americans and these Europeans. I have no money to bribe them. No, they're accepting this because they love what they hear. They hear the truth. So, any other questions? Any ladies questions? There's one. Okay. So she said, if Prabhupada got the key to the back door, who goes through the front door? I don't know. I don't know. Well, as long as you get inside, that's the main thing. The front door may be barred. It may be like you don't go in the front door. And those who try to knock on that door are just going to be, knocking, and they're not going there. In Christianity, they got the purgatory. So you get prepared to go to heaven. And some people, they stay in purgatory. Of course, you go to hell. That's eternal damnation. So Prabhupada has stopped all that. It was predicted by Nostradamus that there will be a person who comes. He will be carrying a rod in rose-colored cloth. Now, Nostradamus is a contemporary of Lord Chaitanya. This comes out in his next book. And so Lord Chaitanya is seen by this person in France, Nostradamus, famous seer. He saw this personality dressed in yellow change into blue cloth, Chaitanya Nityananda. He said that this personality will be given great honor in 500 years. He'll be the ornament of his time from that time when he was a contemporary. Okay, and he also said that this person carrying that rod who travels will be like thunder. It'll be peaceful to the ears and very soothing and answering all the doubts and questions that people have. But to the stone, it will break the stone, meaning the walls of like the scientific walls of, in the halls of ivy and in Germany where they have the greatest opposition to the movement. They will break those stones and it'll devastate. So from an old urn, there will come new knowledge. A new knowledge from an old urn. That means from the Vedic knowledge will come a whole brand new dissertation from what it was old now is going to be presented new. And that it just cuts off all the other religions because the oldest will come new. And it said there will be a time his disciples, the shaved-headed ones, now this is Nostradamus speaking 500 and more years ago, predicting that there will be shaved-headed ones, they will save the world. These shaved-headed ones will make this movement all over the world successful. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Go Premanandi. So, what can be better than that? You're all going back home. They have no problem. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.